Okay, today's daf in Ketuvot is daf Kuf Gimel. That's not really true. We missed the daf because we lost our Shabbos daf since we gave Mitzvah Shabbos to Hoshana Rabba. So we're going to have to make up a daf. But today's daf is pretty long daf, so I don't know that we'll be able to make it up so quickly, but we'll take care of it Bezrat Hashem during this week. Okay, so we got up to on daf Kuf Gimel. We got up to right around the top, Lo Yom Rushnehem, where we're talking about over here. Remember the Mishnah, man made a deal, and he takes a woman as a wife with an understanding that he's going to be taking care of her daughters from her previous marriage and for 5 years, and then she gets married to somebody else, gets divorced from him, and also makes the same deal, and then the daughter herself gets married, and it ends up that they all have to support her. But what the Mishnah said was that the husband, in the case where she got married, the husband actually supports her with the food, and the others supply her with the cost that it would have been to give her the food. Or in the case where there were only two brothers and she hadn't gotten married yet, so the first one is providing, her new husband is providing the food, and the other one is going to provide her with the money. And they cannot get together and say, well, why don't we just, you know, put our money together and give her the food. Okay, so now the thing that comes out of this Mishnah is fascinating. Because if you take a look at the abstraction, it relates to the following case. There was a guy who rented out a mill, a rechai. And he rented it out in exchange for the person doing the work for him in grinding his grain. Now, in the end, the guy who had rented it out, he ended up getting more money, and he decided that he was going to buy an animal-powered mill for himself. So that's what he did. With Sophie out there, and Zavin Rechai of a Chamra. So he bought a Chamor and a rechayim for himself. So he didn't need the guy to do any kind of work for him anymore. He had his own electric one. So he said to the guy that was renting it, look, I made a deal with you that you would do the grinding, but I don't need grinding anymore. I have my own fancy mill. So now you have to start paying me cash, right? Because I don't need any of your work. So the guy said to him, absolutely not. I cannot pay you cash, but I'm happy to continue grinding for me. So they went to Ravina. What's the din? So Ravina thought, you know what? That's exactly the case in the Mishnah. Because what the Mishnah said was, Lo yomru shnehem, hare anu zanimo take achad. They can't get together and say, we'll feed her. So what happens? One gives her food, and the other one gives her the value of the food, right? So this is interesting, because the only thing that both husbands had agreed to do was to provide food. Nobody agreed to provide cash. But as it turned out, that since she didn't need the food, now you have to give her the cash. Okay, so that sounds exactly like the case that just came up over here. The agreement was that you will do the grinding for me. And since I no longer need the grinding, so now you have to pay me the cash. Same thing that you have to give the child cash because she doesn't need the food. Fantastic raya. Omele Ravavira to Ravina, what kind of raya is that? In the case of our Mishnah, obviously the daughter only has one tummy. There's no way for her to eat double the amount of food, right? So since she has no way to eat the second agreement, so if she doesn't have a right to get the cash, then she's going to be losing basically the agreement. But in this case, she's not going to, the guy over here is not going to lose any money, because over here he can say, the original man who rented it from him, Motzi Amalei, he can say, listen, I don't understand. Are you going to lose any money if I don't give you cash? Absolutely not. All you need to do is go ahead and you can grind as much as you want, sell as much as you want that you ground, and the stuff that I'm going to do, you know, I can go ahead. You can go whatever you want, you know. I can go and you could sell that stuff and I can give you stuff for your own use. So if we continue to do what we were doing before, you're not going to lose any money. So you, instead of grinding, you grind to sell. Where am I causing you a loss? The little Amran, however, we did not claim that he can say, I'm not going to pay you cash. Unless, let leitrina l'rechaya, unless he just simply doesn't have enough customers. So then he's saying, look, I don't have customers, but I'm happy to do according to our agreement. You'll be my customer. And by that, I'm going to be paying you back what I owe you, right? But if anyway, he has customers, so he can't do that. He's going to be working like this. He says, I won't have any work. So if I have to pay you cash, that's straight out loss for me. Masha Inkain, if at the time that he would otherwise use to grind the person who owned it, to grind his grain, and thereby pay him back, he could do exactly the same thing by grinding another customer's grain and then provide the cash to the one who rented it to him. So then that's disgusting. Why should he say he doesn't want to do that? It's no sweat off of his back. The guy's claiming, I don't want you to grind for me anymore. Give me cash. So what possible reason do you have not to give him cash? If you can generate the same cash that you would have to give him, you could generate by grinding somebody else's grain. So it makes absolutely no sense to say that we're going to force him. It's just a plain midas dom that we're going to force this guy to accept that he's not going to pay him cash and he's going to pay him back by making him grind for somebody else and he should not be able to get cash. That's crazy. And that's called kofin amidat sedon, which brings us directly to Doc. Aha! Little did he know that he was entering the lion's den because the lion Richard is gone. So go for it, dear Doc.
Fact on the Heilige Mishnah.
Thank you. All right. So now moving on, we've been talking about the din of an amana. We've been talking about the din of rights to a child's continued support. Now, when we talk about the rights of an amana and her rights to food and so on, we didn't discuss what would be the din of the amana's right to continued usage of the husband's property where she used to live with him, and whether there would be a difference in terms of parnasa in the event that she moved out of that property. So let's discuss that now. And Amana says to the heirs of her husband's who are not her kids, "Yef shila zuzbi beit bali. Look, I am emotionally incapable of moving out of this home. This is the house that I shared with my husband for so many years, and I need to stay here emotionally." So they can't say to her, "You get out of here, go move back into your father's house," meaning your family's house, "and we'll happily support you there." No, they have to support her while she continues to live in the estate. And not only that, they have to, whatever it is, well, this, I shouldn't say not only that, because that's a machlokas rishon, which I'll speak about in a moment. What this means is not that she has a right to keep the whole house for herself, but that whatever the level of living that she was accustomed to while she was with her husband, that she gets to maintain. If there's more beyond that, so then she can't keep them out of the house. But she could certainly have a bedroom. That's the chashivas of the bedroom she used to have in a kitchen and so on and so forth. So that goes according to her covet. And we'll see later on that this is according to his covet if the husband's covet was more. Because remember, we have a cloud, ola imo ve'ino yoredet imo. Now, how about the opposite happens? How about if she said, "Look, I really am so devastated. I mean, to continue to live here with you guys, you're not my kids, and I want to be with my family. It's all that I have left. So I want to move back into my family home." So in that case, the Yorshim can say to her, Imat etzlenu yeshlach mizonot. If you're living here, so then we could support you. But if you're going to leave, we don't want to support you somewhere else. Now, why this is true, we're going to see later on in the Gemara, that they're talking about costs. They're talking about synergy. They're talking about the difference in costs of supporting her as part of a large family or supporting her when she's living on her own. They're not claiming that we don't have to support you at all. But the Mishnah leaves this very much opaque. We don't understand why they shouldn't be chayav just because she's living somewhere else. There's also a question about the first part over here. Suppose he didn't leave the house. You know, so do they have to actually provide her with living space? When it says, notnim la mador lefi kvoda, is that only out of a home that existed? Or do they have to provide a home for her? This is a big machlokas. The Rambam says he has to provide a home. Most of the Rishonim say, well, we're going to see later on that it's only prescribed in the language of the Ksuba that she gets to remain biveti. Remember that lashon. Kol yemei magurah melotech biveti. But if there is no biveti, where would we get the idea that they have to provide her with one? Now, this is not true in the event that it would be inappropriate for her to live with them. In other words, if she's saying emotionally, I don't want to live with you and I need to go back home, then they can tie her to a prorated support based on the additional costs that are going to be incurred by her moving to the father's house. But if she says, I cannot live in that house with them because they are almost the same age as me and it's inappropriate for us to be living together. I mean, there's all kinds of problems here about yichud and so on. We may come to bichurtek. So then they have to support her even though she moved out to her father's house. So obviously we're talking over here where the yorshim are not her own kids. That's what I said before, that the Mishnah is assuming we're not talking about the yorshim. And so because of that, maybe the yorshim are another wife's sons, or maybe the yorshim are brothers of her baal. There were no other ones to be yorshim. So if she's saying that that's why I can't live here, then she continues to get her mizonot, even the Beit Avi. Tana Rabbana. When we say that she lives in that house, what we mean is that she is mishtameshet b'mador k'derech shemishtameshet b'chayei ba'ala. She can use anything in that house that she used to use. They can't say, well, you can't use the washing machine. And yeah, they can't say you can't use the dryer, whatever. Whatever it was that she used to use, then that is what she gets to use. The same thing would be true if she had avadim u'shvachot during the lifetime of her husband that would be working according to her needs. She gets to continue to use them. If she was using clay kesef, clay zahav, beautiful Shabbos becher, golden serving dishes, whatever it is, kederach shemishtameshet b'chayei ba'ala, she continues to live the way she lived. Because all of this, remember, is based on the way that this Masechet analyzes every nuance of the wording of a ksuba. That's called Doresh Diktuva, as we said earlier at the beginning of the Masechet. Shekach katavla, the language of the ksuba is Va'at tehe yatvat beveti umidzana minichsai Kol yemei migar armalutech biveti. Now notice it says biveti twice. You will be living in my home, and you will be supported off of my property all the days that you continue to live as an almona in my home. So that means in my home, I'm stressing the way that you lived in my home while I was alive. And that's precisely why they can't throw her out of the house, because he committed himself that she can stay there. So in my home is a very beautiful way to be shoktu for the almana's rights. But Tani Rav Yosef, It might be that, but it also can cause her problems. Because when he wrote Biviti, he meant in a home. The low bivikti, and this is again a drusha. Normally, a house is whatever house I'm living in. But because of the fact that it says bivikti twice, so because of that, we're medayik, that it has to be a home. And a home means that it's roomy as a house, not a bikti. Remember bikti, the Gemara in Shabbos says, my bikta beit akka, a place of pain, meaning everybody's crushed together. There's no room. If it's cramped, then they do have a right to say, listen, I mean, we're the heirs. This is the only home that our father left us. So because of that, even though he had promised her, he did not promise her a place where there's not going to be a place for his own children. And therefore, if it's a small place, they have a right to tell her to go home. Omer of Nachman, what these dinim imply is that if Yitomim sold the house where she used to live, they have absolutely no rights to do that because the moment that her husband died, she is already considered to have the zechuyos to his home. And therefore, how can they sell something that doesn't belong to them when she has a shibud on this house? Hey, wait a minute. So then how do you explain why that's true, whereas in a different case, Mishna, why is it different from the case of Rav Asi or Rav Yochanan? The Om Rav Asi or Rav Yochanan. Yitomim shekadmu umachru b'nechasim mu'atim. Now remember, nechasim mu'atim are properties that are left by someone where there's insufficient monetary value to provide for the support of both the girls. Remember, the girls get that special support and the yorshim for the entire period. It's machlokas, we have elsewhere machlokas, whether it's for a year or it's until they become gedolim. And if there's not enough to provide that, so then remember the halacha, the girls get the money, but the boys could go banging on the doors to ask people to support them because of the fact that the father was protecting his daughters from that type of design and exposure. Now, that seems to be the same as the rights of the almana to the house. And you just said, that Rav Nachman paskin, that if you try to sell that, it's nothing, the sale is batel u'mevutel because it's not yours. But Rabbi Yochanan is quoted as saying that if the Yitomim sold before the Beis Din gave out the entire value to the girls, so if the boys went in and sold it, Masha Machru Machru, that look, you know, if they did it, then it's done. Masha Enkein, over here you said that if the boys go ahead and try to sell the house, that it's bottled. What's the difference? Answer to the Gemara is a big difference. The rights of the girls to be able to collect begins when the father dies. So hasam lo mishtabi lo mirchayim. So until the court establishes that, they don't own it. And therefore, they have to go to the Beis Din, and the boys over here ran ahead of them and sold it before the Beis Din assigned them that right. Masha Inkin, when they're trying to sell the home the husband had given her together with the ketuvah, as soon as the ketuvah has she'ibudim for her to be able to collect from the chasim mishubadim, so does the house have her she'ibudim, and therefore mishtabru amichayim. So the chelek of the boys is not theirs, and there's no way that they can sell it. Om Rabbayu, you know, we have a Kabbalah that if a house collapsed, but the almana was living in, it's not the responsibility of the yorshim to rebuild it, because, again, analyze the lashon of the ksuva. You shall live in my house as long as you are living in my house through your almana years. Well, where is his house? A collapsed house is not my house. I mean, it's a churva. So therefore, even if they would rebuild it, that's not his house. It's Parim Chadashah's Molika. How about if they want she wants to rebuild. So let's take a look at the Braita. Tanya Nami Yochi, there's a Braita that says exactly what the Kabbalah was of Abaye. In the event that Amador Almanosh Nafal, Eina Yoshim Chayavim Livnoto. And not only that, and this Braita adds additional chiddush, that even if she says, okay, fine, I'm not asking you for any money, I'll go and I'll rebuild it myself. Just allow me to rebuild the house. No, ain't Shomila. They do not have to do that because once the house is a churva, she doesn't have any more shi'ibudim on it. And therefore, if they don't want her to rebuild it and instead they'd rather sell the property, it's up to them. Boya Baye, let me ask you something. Suppose she has been putting in money into this house in order to strengthen it. So she did it, she puts, she puts up money. So the truth is, this house would never have lasted this long if she had not done as she puts. So is she allowed to continue living there? Or do we say, well, if the house would not have been around this long unless she had done that she puts, so then she didn't have a shibud on it for that long. Or do we say, no, it's only the actual collapse of the house that takes away her rights to it, because now it's not a house, it's a churva. But just because she was the one who allowed the situation and it would continue to survive, that doesn't mean that it wasn't included in the rights to his house. As she puts, doesn't change the house, does it? Take her. And that is a question that the Braita doesn't address, and we don't have a clear answer to that. Now, the Mishnah said that if she says, I simply cannot emotionally live with you guys, I need to go back to my family. So the Mishnah said, strangely, that the Yorshim can say, look, we only have to support you if you're going to live with us, but otherwise, we're not going to support you. Well, what's the logic to that, Esther? But late v'lokiyat v'tatam, why can't they support her when she's living in her family's home? Does that make sense? I mean, she owes them her living there? Ah, this is a raya to Rav Huna. The Amar Rav Huna, birkat habayit beruba. Basically, the extent of the bracha that is chala on a home, meaning the amount of money that is going to be there and the amount of continued growth that will be, all the concepts of bracha, which is more obviously than just money. It's a function of the number of people in it. And therefore, as long as she is there, then she is contributing by her presence to the simple meaning, of course, we're going to see about this additional concept of bracha. The simple meaning is that we have savings of scale, and that where we're dealing with a large family, the presence of an additional person, when there's 20 people in the house and one more person to provide for it. I mean, we're paying all the electric bills anyway, which is part of her mezainis. We're giving, we're preparing these big meals anyway. I mean, so one additional person is really not that much of an extra burden. But then we also have, of course, the concept of synergy. The more people that are there, the greater the overall productivity of the home. And therefore, her very presence as an active member of a household is itself additional bracha. We take that into consideration when the husband wrote, you know, you'll be provided for as long as you're living in my home and so on. So that's birkat habayit beruba. So once she leaves, so now it'll be much more expensive to support her elsewhere. And we're going to have less money because we have less bracha. So why should we have to pay that? Okay, says, I understand that you have a right to lower the support. How about doing it prorated? So in other words, if she was caused an additional 20% productivity in the home, so fine, take that off. But you can't say you're not going to support her, can you? Does that make sense? What is this, binary issue? So they're going, no, of course, that's what it means. The Mishnah never meant to say that they have a right to say that we won't give you a penny. All they can say is we cannot provide for you as much as it costs to support you where you are, but we can give you as much as it would have cost us for you to remain in the house.
Now, but when you're preparing drinks, so you prepare for a whole bunch of people at one time, and then one person's drink gets absorbed.
So why don't you put your, yeah, where your mouth is.
I have the old version of Zoom. It doesn't let the transfer. I have wines. I have olive oil here, all kinds of things. I'm sorry.
That sounds great. I'm in perfect shape to drink it. Okay. So you'll notice from the Lashon of Rav Huna that you see something that actually Rav Huna explained. Rav Huna, Lashon Chachamim Bracha, the way that the Chachamim speak provides bracha, provides you insights into bracha. Lashon Chachamim, the way that they speak, teaches you how to get rich. Lashon Chachamim Marpe, the way they speak, teaches you how to get well. In other words, even when we're not talking about bracha, and even when we're not talking specifically about getting rich, and even when we're not talking about specifically a question of how to get well, nonetheless, the choice that the Chachamim made about the words that they use gives over all of these things, bracha, briyut, and so on and so forth. So let me show you. Bracha, I just told you. And I just tell you that you're going to increase the bracha of your home. And that means that you have to understand that when you're together, that there is an increase in the bracha min hashamayim. That's why I said it that way. It wasn't just a question of the issue of savings of scale. It's a question of bracha. Osha. Where do we see Osha? That's not Hamocher Perot L'Chaveiro. Somebody is selling fruit. So now the question is, he wants to make sure he got a good deal, and he wants to make sure that he's able to be kena, and that the guy can't change his mind by saying, well, you were never Moshech, so therefore I've changed my mind. So what should he do? So it says that in the Mishnah itself, it says the halacha is like this, that in an event that somebody sold Perot and the kena was Moshech, but he didn't measure it yet. He was still Kena, because Mashiach is a Kenya. And even if he didn't measure it, so then it doesn't matter. They've already agreed, I'm going to pay you X per kilo. So you measure it afterward. But how about in the event that he was Modei, but he still hadn't done Mashiach? So then he wasn't Kena, because Lamaisa, even doing all the medida in the world and all the agreements in the world, is not an act of kinyan. So therefore, we're talking over here, though, the Maisa, that the one who was selling, he did all Mashiach, because otherwise, obviously, the measuring itself would be Hagabah. We're talking over here where he needs Mashiach. Fine, so what should he do? He doesn't have time now. It's big order. He doesn't have time to Mashiach. What should he do? Imaya pikeach, socher et mikomo. So if he wants to make sure that there'll be no problem, he can use a Kenyan Chatzar by also paying a little bit extra and saying, listen, I want to pay you for the rights to put it here. Let me rent the place for you. That way, he would be Kena with the fact that he owns the land. And that way, the person will not be able to change his mind about the deal. So that means in telling this halacha, they're giving you some good advice about simple ways to protect yourself in deals. And marpe, we see also from the Lashon of the Mishnah, completely agav, we see how to get well. What does the Mishnah say? Remember, we had the Mishnah in Pesachim. Let's see if I can stop these notifications here. Let's see if it works. So, it says over there, remember, you shouldn't chew chitim and then put it on a maka that you have. Why? Because the chitim will become chomet since you moisten them with saliva, and that causes chimutz. Now, meanwhile, you see, crazy thing, that a good way to provide a sterile coating for a wound is to actually chew up chitim, and that makes a mixture that is good for the wound. So here we're talking about the dinim of chimutz, and memela we learn a halacha about refuah. Ten rabban, b'sha'at betirato shel rebbe. So now that we've been talking about how children have to deal with a father who died and left a woman who was not their mother, this same situation happened with Rebbe. So when Rebbe sensed that he was near death, so he said, I have to speak to my children. So his sons come in, and he said to them, Amar Leam, be very careful of your mother's covet. Now we'll see, it wasn't really their mother, and that's why he was adding the tzivui. So I want you to be careful of your mother's covet. I want you to leave my lamp in the usual area where I sit, even though you think I'm no longer there. And I want you to make sure that the little desk that I use and the table that I use to eat remains exactly set in the normal place. I want my mita to be made properly in its normal place. And Yosef from Haifa and Shimon from Ephraim, they served me well during my lifetime. They should serve me after I die. Okay? We'll see what that means. So now let's start with the beginning. Hizaru b'chvodimchem, be careful to honor your mother. I mean, that's sort of like a deraita, isn't it? Did Rebbe really have to tell his children as he was dying, be careful to honor your mother? Deraita, yidichtiv kabet avicha v'imecha. So what did he have to mention it for? No, your mother was not really their mother. It was his wife. But the fact is that he was telling them to be mechabed her anyway. So what, says the Gemara? Eshet avnani diyoraita. It's also echiv diyoraisa. Titanya kabed et avicha ve'et imecha et avicha et eshet avicha, even if it's not your mother, and et imecha et your mother's husband, even if it's not your father. And then we have the et that comes to add your older brother. Rabot et achicha hagadol. So this is a diyoraisa. So why did Rebbe have to tell his children, who, as we'll see, they were tremendous talmid chachamim who took his place? Why would he have to tell them such a thing? Because hanemili mechayim, the din of et avicha, et imecha, is only as an ancillary to the cover that you are giving to avicha and imecha. Aval acher misa lo, after the father dies, there's no diraisa to be mechabed his wife. And after the mother dies, there's no diraisa to be mechabed her husband. Therefore, Rebbe told them, I am asking you and telling you that this is correct to do, that you should be mechabed her even after my own death. Now, he also said, let the ner be in the place, let the shulchan be in its place, and let my bed be made. Well, I mean, he's dying, isn't he? What does he need a lamp for? That's because every Friday night after Rebbe died, he would come home to his house and make Kiddush. And this was the Kiddush of Rebbe at the moment of the Kiddush of Shabbos. So when Shabbos was Chal, Rebbe would come back home. So therefore, he needed everything to be arranged properly. Now, once it happened that on one Friday night, a neighbor was screaming and calling for Rebbe's wife. So she's crying out at the door. So the Amma of Rebbe said, shut up, Rebbe's here. Shh. It's not nice to be shouting like that. So once Rebbe heard that, he stopped coming. And why did he stop coming? He felt that people, if once it got out that he's at home on Friday night, and this starts becoming this big phenomena, then people are going to say, what, he's greater than everyone that lived until now, and they didn't come home Friday night to say Kiddush. How come he comes home? So because of that, he felt it was inappropriate, and he didn't want to come back anymore. And when he said Yosef from Haifa and Shimon from Ephraim, Now, the people who heard this tzivui assumed that he was saying that these two guys should be in charge of the funeral. They were the ones who were mishamish. They should carry his mita and so on and so forth. And then they were shocked to discover that they died before Rebbe, and they actually ended up being buried before him. Because it took a long time, Rebbe, there were all these aspedim, as we're going to see. So then people said, oh my gosh, what Rebbe wanted to say was that he didn't mean in Elam Hazeh, he meant Lahu Alma Udagama. He meant to say, these boys are going to be serving me in Elam Haba. So why did he need to say that? Because otherwise people would have thought, how come they suddenly died when Rebbe died? They'll say it must be that they were not kosher people, but because of the schus of Rebbe, so they stayed alive. But the moment that Rebbe died, they died. So in order to avoid people thinking bad things about them, so the lolemra milta avilu, there was a reason that they should die, and it's only because of Rebbe, ada idmanami, they only lived this long because of schus of the Rebbe, hudanilu. So Rebbe wanted people to understand that Adarabba, they were on a tremendous madriga, and they needed to be near the Darga of Rebbe in Olam Haba. Why Davka from Haifa and from Efrat? There's an amazing chat from the father of the Hafla. He brings this from his father. He says, because it says that you're not allowed to be Mishamish with an Amoret. Right? So we possibly want in Brock. And it says that you're not allowed to be Mishamish with someone who was Tani Mishnah. So, meaning nobody can be Mishamish used. Remember the story of the Resh Lakish. The Resh Lakish said over, you can be Mishamish b'man de Tani, v'lo t'shamish b'man de Mas. So you can use people who learned Mishnah, but not people that are teaching others. Since the Gemara says that you are not allowed to appoint teachers from Haifa or from Ephraim. Why? Because they don't pronounce Chet properly, and they get mixed up, like in the Tanakh, where we have the sort of the Ephraim, and they don't know how to properly differentiate the osios, Shibolet, Sibolet, so on and so forth. So
the Ayin and the Aleph. Don't let somebody from Haifa
mention that. Exactly. So because of that, he was sure that they were only learned, but they weren't teachers. Therefore, he wanted to be Mishamish Davka. That's why he mentions where they come from. Fascinating. Anyway, but that's what the Aflo's father said. All right. So then after that, Rebbe said, I now need to speak to the Chachomim of Yisrael. And he said to them, look, I'm giving you instructions about my Levaya. Al tisbeduni ba'ayarot, no hespedim in small towns. Oshivu yeshiva le'akashloshim yom. Immediately after 30 days, you cut out these hespedim because there's no learning when a nasi dies. There's no learning during the period of hespedim in the yeshivas. After shloshim yom, I want the yeshivas back open again. Shimon b'ni should be the chacham. Gamliel b'ni nasi. Chanina bar chama is the rosh yeshiva. So here's some question about what is meant by Shimon ben Chacham. Some learn that it means he is a Chacham, but nonetheless, Gamliel ben should be the Nasi. So that even though Shimon is smarter than Gamliel, I was going to ask why appoint Gamliel, but nonetheless, Gamliel ben Nasi. But the Pashtus is, as we know, that during the entire period of the Nasius, and even during the Reish Geusa's time, there was a specific position called the Chacham, from which we still have the Sfaradim talking about the Chacham. And that position of the Chacham was to be the one who answered all of the halacha questions, as opposed to the Dayanut. He wasn't a Dayan, he was a Chacham. The Dayan would adjudicate, and the Chacham would answer kashas and shailas and halacha. Is this a kosher chicken? What's the din of Anida? And so on and so forth. So Be'isr Ve'etar was a Chacham. So the Chacham used to sit mamish to the right of the Nasi. And he's saying Shimon Beni is the Chacham. And he's indeed rotwi. Mitzad HaChochma. He was greater than Gamliel. But nonetheless, Gamliel, my older son, should be the Nasi. And I'm appointing Hanina Bar Chama to be the Rosh Yeshiva. Okay? So, let's go through the meaning of these tzivui. Al tisab duni ba'ayarot. So, first of all, no hespedim in the small towns. Why is that? So, people thought, mishum tircha hu deka'amar. It's because he didn't want people to have to, I mean, there's a small towns, they'd have to provide seating for thousands of people who would be coming along. It wasn't right to be toreach there. But given the chazi dekasabti bekrachim, the ka'asu kulei alma, when they saw that there were immense hespedim in the large cities, and that everyone from all of the towns along the way were needed to be matriach to come to the large cities, they said, so it must be that the reason that Rebbe wanted it this way, he felt that there would be more kavod haTorah by having greater crowds, and that they should therefore only have the crowds in the large cities. And then when he said, reopen the yeshivas after 30 days, and that means that it's not the time for hesped, because he held the lo adifta mi Moshe Rabbeinu. It's inappropriate, because by Moshe Rabbeinu it says, v'yivku b'nei yisrael Moshe b'avos mo'ov 30 yom. So if 30 days was enough for Moshe, 30 days is enough for me. And what actually happened was, that tlatin yumin satin b'yamomu u'balayda. So for the first 30 days, keeping with Rebbe's instructions, they did the hespedim, and the yeshivas were closed. Then they opened the hespedim, as the yeshivas. But they did not stop being maskinim. They opened the yeshivas, and they learned all, either they learned all night, and they were maskin in the day, or in some places they were maskin all night, and they learned all day, and that was for an entire 12 months. Fine. So at least they did what Rebbe said, because they started after Shlosh. Now, the day that Rebbe died, Nafka bat kolava amra, a basko came out and said, anyone who is present at the Levaya of Rebbe is mizuman l'chaye olam haba. So mizuman means as opposed to yesh lo chelek l'olam haba. Mizuman means he's invited. He's invited means he doesn't need rishus to come in. He doesn't have to go through any kinds of dinim. He's not worried about having to be in Gehenim, he goes directly to Chaye Olam Haba. Now, there was a guy who used to do the laundry in Rebbe's house, and every day he was there. On that particular day, he wasn't feeling well, and he didn't show up. When he found out that everybody that was there was Mezuman Chaye Olam Haba, he went up to the roof and committed suicide. It's machlokas whether he committed suicide or that he fell out of shock, but this is, by the way, a whole major discussion based on this Gemara, among other places, about whether it is mutter to commit suicide in certain circumstances. So that's the question, whether it means that he committed no falagra, means that he fell, or means that he jumped. Because it says, yotz the batko v'amra, at that moment, a basko came out and said, I'm including the laundryman in the zimun l'chay olam haba. Amazing, amazing. So you see from here that the death of a Talmud Chacham is mechaper totally. There's not even any need for kapor l'achar misa. Then he said, Shimon b'ni Chacham. That's the pasuk, by the way, Yir'e Chachamim Yomusu. That specifically, there's an inyan of Re'iya b'misa Chacham that is changes the darga of an individual who sees it. Shimon b'ni Chacham, meaning what? Why was he saying Shimon b'ni Chacham? So now, I mean, this is a little bit strange, because if you learn that he was appointing him as the so-called Chacham, as an official position, so then why are you asking why did he need to say it? I mean, of course he needed to say it, because this was his appointment. So this seems to prove that he was only saying that Shimon b'ni is a Chacham. So what was his meaning in saying that? It's a big question against all of those that explain that he was actually being given the position. But the Pashtus is that what it means is there was a Chacham until then, wasn't there? So what happened to the Chacham? Is he saying we're going to throw the old Chacham out? Of course, you can't throw the old Chacham out. It's highly unreasonable to say that the Chacham died because Rebbe died. So because of that, what it must mean is that you should know that Shimon Beni remains the Chacham that he was, according to them. So obviously, why shouldn't he? That would be the question according to them. So Achikama, Afal Pi Shimon Beni Chacham, Gamliel Beni Nasi. Even though it's true that he is more roi in terms of his Chachma, nonetheless, you have to make Gamliel the Nasi. That's what he was saying. Omar Levi, Tzricha L'Meimar. Why did Rebbe have to say that? Obviously, that's true. Because anyway, the halacha is that the oldest one of the children, as long as he's roi to be Mamali Mekomo, he takes the place. It's the din in the Malchus, and it's the din in the Nesiut. So why would Rebbe have to say such a thing? Om Reb Shimon by Rebbe, so Rebbe Shimon, who was, of course, the topic of the discussion, he was very angry at the way that Levi, at the chutzpah, to question Rebbe's words at the time of his death. And he said to him, you know why it was needed? It was needed for you and your lame leg. Why did you have your lame leg? Because you spoke with chutzpah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu also. That was that old story where Levi went and he said, ah, Alita Lamala, you've gone up to the Shamayim, you don't care about your children anymore. You're still the same idiot you were. Look how you talk. Chutzpah can ask such a question with Rebbe. That's why we need it. Because, in fact, if he hadn't said it, then it wouldn't have been Gamliel was Nasi. Why? Why Kashale? What exactly was he claiming would be different? And that Levi was wrong? Because, I mean, isn't it a pasuk? Kakro kamar, ve'et ha-mamlacha natan Yehoram ki hu ha-bechor? Yehoshaphat gave the malchus to Yehoram because he was the bechor. So the same thing should be true over here, that it goes to Gamliel. So what? Why isn't Levi right, actually? No, the reason is because Yehoram was Memali Makom Avotavaya. He was the one that was Memali Yehoshaphat's place, and that's why Yehoshaphat gave it to him. But Rebbe Gamliel was not Memali Makom Avotav because he was less of a Chacham than his brother Shimon. And therefore, if it hadn't been that Rebbe had said the Dafka to give it to Rebbe Gamliel, then actually it would have been Rebbe Shimon, the younger son, who would have been the Nasi. So then how did Rebbe do that? So then Rebbe might time over Achi, because Nehid Einu Memali Makom Avotav B'Chokma, B'Yirat Chet Memali Makom Avotav Achi. Since Rebbe Gamliel was the one who was closest to Rebbe in his Madrega of Yiras Chet, that comes before. Because Chochma you can always teach. And therefore, Rebbe wanted him to be the Nasi, even though Shimon had more Chochma. And then he said, Chanina Bar Chama, Yeshev Barosh, Lo Kibel, Rebbe Chanina. Rebbe Chanina did not do what Rebbe said. And he refused to accept that he should be the Rosh Hashiva, because Rabbi Afas was Godomi Menoshte Shanurim Echza. Rabbi Afas was 2.5 years older than he was, and he thought that it was a lack of Derech Eretz to Rabbi Afas that he should become the Rosh Yeshiva during the lifetime of Rabbi Afas. So because of that, Rabbi Afas actually became the Rosh Yeshiva. Rabbi Chanina was not ready to be a Talmud to Rabbi Afas, because Lamaisi, he was the one that was supposed to be Rosh Yeshiva, and there was no reason that Rabbi Afas should be a Rosh Yeshiva over him. So he sat outside during that time, and Yos Rabbi Chanina Avroi. So Rabbi Chanina sat outside, and he wouldn't come into the Beis HaMedrash to be under the Rosh Yeshivaship of Rabbi Afas. And because of that, Levi came to be his chavrusa, because he felt that it was very inappropriate for Rabbi Chanina, who was meant to be the Rosh Yeshiva. He should sit outside. He shouldn't even have a chavrusa. That was terrible. So Levi came, and he sat and learned with him over there. Now, what happened was that when Rabbi Afas died, so then Rabbi Chanina became the Rosh Yeshiva, because that's what Rabbi had appointed. So then Levi did not have a chavrusa anymore because Rebbe Chanina became Rosh Hashiva. And he was not willing that he should be a talmid to Rebbe Chanina because he was on, basically, he was the same. He would have been willing to be by Rebbe Afetz, who was older than him. But over here was the same age and the same level of chokmah. And we wish that poor Gavi would be able to concentrate on the Daf Yomi. But we see what he's going through. Okay. So because of this, what he did is he left Eretz Yisrael. He had no choice because he didn't know what to learn with. He left Eretz Yisrael and he came to Bava. And this is what we know, that what happened was that they came and they told Rav, Gavra Rabba Ikla Lenardo Umitla. Some big Adam Gadol who is lame, whoa, which means that it was Levi, he was Dorish Kalila Shari. And he said that you're allowed to wear a Kalila. Remember, we had this in Shabbos, that even though the Chachomim have a desire against wearing the kind of things that will might be taken off to show to a friend, but a Kalila is mutter. And that this we learned in Shabbos. Why is the Kalila mutter? Because the Kalila is usually, it's a very kosher thing to wear. It's like a crown, sort of. And because of that, it's only worn by an Isha Chashuva. An Isha Chashuva doesn't take off clothes in the middle of Shul Rabin to show her jewelry. It's low class. So therefore, when Rav heard that, he said, oh, Shmami Anoch Nafshe de Rav Afis. Now I understand what happened. Even though we didn't hear about it, it's clear that Rabbi Afis must have died. And therefore, Rebbe Chanina was appointed as a Rosh Hashiva. And now Levi didn't have anybody to learn with. So because of that, he came here to Narda because he needed a chavrusa. Fine. So he was not going to become a Talmud of Rebbe Chanina, and therefore he had no choice. I don't understand, says the Gemara. How do you know who died? Maybe Rebbe Chanina died, and therefore he lost his chavrusa. And Rebbe Afis was still alive. And he was the Rosh Hashiva. And because Rebbe Chanina died, Levi didn't have anybody to sit and learn with. And because of that, he came to Bava. How did Rebbe know that it was Rebbe Afis who died? Maybe it was Rebbe Chanina. Well, first of all, it's obvious because Levi would have had no problem of becoming a Talmud to Rebbe Afis. He only had a problem because Rebbe Afis was older than Levi also. Same way he was older than Rebbe Chanina. It was only to Rebbe Chanina that he felt there was no reason for him to be Mechayef himself, to become a lower level Talmud. Or I could tell you another thing. Even if that weren't the case, since Rebbe had said that Rebbe Chanina has to become Rosh Hashiva, there's no way that Rebbe Chanina could have died before becoming Rosh Hashiva. Because it says in the pasuk, "Vatigzar Omer vayokom lach." As Yov points out, a tzaddik says something and it has to become true. So if Levi came to Narda, it can't be that Rebbe Chanina had died. Must be Rebbe Afis had died and Rebbe Chanina became Rosh Hashiva. But why exactly did Rebbe appoint Rebbe Chanina Bar Chama when there was Rebbe Chiya? And Rebbe Chiya was a greater chacham in terms of his yediyas, then, and that's what you need to be a Nasi, then Rebbe Chanina. No, Rebbe Chiya had already died. What do you mean Rebbe Chiya had already died? Rebbe Chiya said, Ani ra'iti kivrosho Rebbe ve'oradati alav d'ma'ot, that I saw Rebbe's kever and I cried over it. Well, if Rebbe Chiya had died before Rebbe, it would have been awfully hard for him to cry over Rebbe's kever. So obviously, Rebbe predeceased Rebbe Chiya. So then why didn't Rebbe make Rebbe Chiya the Rosh Hashiva? Well, I guess we got this backwards. Epoch. It was Rebbe who must have said that he saw the kever of Rebbe Chiya and that he cried over Rebbe Chiya's kever. No. Because Rebbe Chiya also said, Oto ayom shemet Rebbe botla kedusha. The day that Rebbe died, that was the end of Kedusha. Now, that's the simple meaning. You'll remember, and I'm sure Gavi will remember, the Rabbeinu Bachya, who says that the end of Kedusha meant that there's no din of Kedusha Skayani, and that they can all be Metame themselves because of the fact that Rebbe was such a tzaddik that he's not Metame B'Meise, or because he's a Nasi, and a Nasi is considered to be everybody's loss, and therefore it's considered to be your own relative, or because the Nasi, the requirements are that everybody has to be there, and if somebody isn't there, so it's like a Meis Mitzvah, that you're not giving the cover to the Meis Mitzvah, whatever, a lot of different approaches. So that means we have four possibilities, and that is either one of the three that I just mentioned, or that he meant it in terms of the Madrega of Rebbe, even though in Seita we talk about Rebbe in terms of the Bittul of Anova and Yir HaScheid, but there was actually this as well. Okay, so it could be any of these things, and now we have to be mavorich on the Shichur of Gavi to be able to participate in the Hashkafta of Rebbe, to be able to be Zeicha, to be Mezuman, Dechai Olam Haba. My God, things that get in the way are horrifying. Okay, so anyway, so obviously Rebbe Chiya lived after Rebbe died. No, over here also. Must be Rebbe said this about Rebbe Chiya, and not Rebbe Chiya said about Rebbe. No, it's also not correct. Because look, it says in the Braisa, when Rebbe became ill, so Rebbe Chiya came into Rebbe's room and found that Rebbe was crying. So he said to him, Rebbe, doesn't it say in the Braita that if somebody dies laughing, that that's a good sin? If somebody dies crying, that's a bad sin. If he dies laughing, that means that he's laughing and smiling at a vision of Gan Eden, which is a makom of Or Zeruah LaTzadik, and that makes a person very happy. Masha'in Kain, the place of Bechia is Evrei Be'ina Kabocha, Ma'ayan Yeshitiyu. We learned that that's talking about Gehenim. So it's a bad simon for a person to die. He's crying. It means that he's expecting Gehenim. And once we already started the Braisa, he quote the whole Braisa. If he dies facing upwards, that's a good simon. If he dies facing downwards, that's a bad simon. Again, because where is he? Is he looking towards the Shamayim or is he looking towards the Aret? Of if he's facing, this is a Rav who's facing the Tzibur, so then that's a Simon that he's making an impact on the Tzibur. But a Klape HaKoto, Simon Ralo. If his face is all pale, he looks like he's dying, then it's a Simon Ralo. But if his face is bright and alive, it's a sign that he's been facing Malachim, has been facing other Tzadikim, or came to be Bekabapanav. If he dies there of Shabbos, that's a simen yofa. Because since Erev Shabbos is the time where he's going to go directly into Shabbos, and on Shabbos there's no Gehenna, and Shabbos there's Menucha, so it's a good sign. And if he makes B'Metzoy Shabbos, that's a simen ralo, because he just missed it. If he dies Erev Yom Kippur, that's a bad sign because he just missed out on his kapara. If he dies Motzei Yom Kippur, that's a good sign. If he dies from stomach problems, that's a good sign. Why? Most tzaddikim die specifically of stomach problems because that is that the way of kapara. It's a very good kapara, as Rashi says, because it's very painful. And as Tosfos says, as we have in Shabbos, as Tosfos says, that it's because this is like we find in the Gemara about the Knis of Moshe Rabbeinu, that we learn out from there, the halacha of the Shiva Yomim before going up, that was the Machlokas there. So that was, according to the Gemara, that was in order to use up all the Achila Vishtiya B'toch Me'av so that when he was Eila L'Rakia, he should be Eila as a person who is beyond Elam Hazeh. So that's how Tosfos understands it. So once everything is removed from the body, so that means that he's on a Madrega of complete Ruchnius. Anyway, that's the Raisa. Meanwhile, he's asking Rebbe, so why are you crying? That's crazy. Rebbe said to him, well, I'm not crying because I'm dying. I'm crying because I won't be able to do the Torah mitzvahs that I'm going to be missing at. That's not. I was only crying because of Misa. Over here, I'm crying over the loss of mitzvahs. But anyway, obviously, if Rebbe Chiya had this discussion with Rebbe, it means that Rebbe died before Rebbe Chiya. So we're back to the kasha. Why did Rebbe not appoint Rebbe Chiya as the Rosh Hashiva? Well, I mean, I could say Epoch on this too. Maybe this whole conversation was backwards and was Rebbe who said all of this to Rebbe Chiya, which I agree is a little unlikely, but it's possible. Or, you know what? It could be that none of these things are mechayev us to be Mepech. No. In fact, it was actually Rebbe Chiya who outlived him and so on and so forth. The reason that Rebbe did not want to appoint Rebbe Chiya is because Rebbe Chiya was accomplishing such incredible things with his maase ha-mitzvahs. Rebbe Chiya was also b'mitzvahs, and Rebbe Savar, lo avkere, I'm not going to make him give up on all of that. Because once I give him the job of Rosh Hashiva, he's messed up. He's not going to have any time to do anything. Everybody's going to be bothering him. And that's the last thing that he needs for a person who's so dedicated. And this is the famous Meister, the Avichai Minzu, Rebbe Chanina, Rebbe Chiya. This was actually a conversation between Rebbe Chanina, who ended up being the Rosh Hashiva, and Rebbe Chiya. And what it was that Rebbe Chanina would say to Rebbe Chiya was, how do you have the chutzpah of arguing with me? You think you are ready to argue with me? I am such a chacham that im chas v'sholom nishtak chaturam Yisrael, even if Klal Yisrael would forget the Torah, I could recreate the whole Torah through my pilpul. Don't argue with me. You got to be crazy to argue with me. Omer loy Rebbe Chiya. Rebbe Chiya said to him, on the contrary, you're good enough to restore the Torah. That's really great. I'm the one who made certain that the Torah doesn't have to be restored. Because since I made certain that Torah will never be forgotten from Klal Yisrael, I'll tell you what I do. Da'itina kitana v'shadayna. I bring the seeds of the pishtan and I plant it. And then when it grows, megadlana nishbe, I weave it into nets. I use those nets to tzaydana tavya. I use the nets to trap deer. And then I shech the deer. I feed the basar to Yosemite. And I take the skins, arichma megilata mimashri. I make beautiful gilyonais for a sefer Torah from the hides. And then I go to a place where there are no schools. I go to towns where children have nowhere to learn. And I sit there and I write Chamisha Chumshe and Chamisha Yanuke. I write the Chamisha Chumshe Torah and I give one to each child. And then I teach Baal Peh, six children, one Seder of Mishnah. And I tell each one of them, you have to teach the Seder that I taught you. You have to teach all of the other kids. Atmi Sidrach Lechavracha. And by doing this with such a madrega of Kedusha, that every last bit from the beginning to the end was done, L'Shem Shamayim, with absolute Kedusha. The flax was planted L'Shem Shamayim. The nets were made L'Shem Shamayim. The deers were trapped L'Shem Shamayim. The oiris were turned into svarim l'shem shemayim, etc., etc. The final intent has to permeate every last physical element that participates in that. And that way, there is no way that it can be sullied. This is like the Medrash that talks about the Mishkan, that the Mishkan, the reason that the Mishkan is kayim la'ad la'omi alamim, which we learn out from the Atzei Shitim Bimdim, is because there was nothing that could have been more perfect in terms of the pure physicality on every level from where it came, so that it was a direct line from the lowest level of the physical to the highest level of the Ashras Hashchina. That's why the Gra says that if someone would actually be capable of doing that, he would build a home that was built entirely from the beginning with each thing done. L'shem Shamayim, it could never be destroyed, exactly like the Mishkan. So that's what happened over here with Rebbe Chiya. And that's why Rebbe always used to say about Rebbe Chiya, Kama Gedeli Maaseh Chiya. It's the Maasim of Chiya that are unbelievably great. And that is the reason he didn't want to appoint him Rosh Hashiva. Omale Rabbi Shimon bar Rabbi. So when Rabbi said that, Rabbi Shimon, his son, asked Rabbi, are they even greater than your maisim? Afilu mimcha? Omale im? Absolutely. Omale Rabbi Shmuel, so my father's atzal always used to ask. So if that's the case, why wasn't Rabbi doing the maisim of Rabbi Chiya? So what was Rabbi doing, wasting his time, if he could have also been doing with Rabbi Chiya? And his answer was, he was making Rabbi Chiyas. So this was Rabbi Chiya, who was a Talmud of Rabbi. This was the Madrega of Rabbi Chiya. So Rabbi Shmuel, who was Rabbi Yossi's son, are you saying that Rabbi Chiya's maisim were even greater than those of Rabbi Yossi, meaning of my own father? Omar lechas v'shol. Lo te'ekezos b'Yisrael. We know so many Gemaras about the Madrega of Rabbi Yossi in Rabbi's eyes, even though Maisa, I mean, the fact is that it's pretty clear that Rabbi Yossi was on a higher Madrega than Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi was higher Madrega than Rabbi Yossi, but we know from all over how he was Mechabener to that extent. Okay, anyway, Omar lehem, I'm sorry, but I think we should finish, you know, because we're behind the daf anyway. I don't want to get further behind. So it says the next thing that he says, I need my younger son. My younger son is Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Shimon came in, and Rabbi gave him over Sidrei Chochma. And that, according to some of the Achronim, Sidrei Chochma means he gave him over my inspirations and my Merkava. Why? Because he was now Av Bezdin. The Gemara said in Chagiga, Ein Meisrim Meisa Merkava Elala Av Bezdin. So, okay. So now he could give him over the Meisa Merkava. A little bit difficult to believe that he had enough time to give him over the Meisa Merkava. All right. But the Pashto says Sidrei Chochma was the way that he had to paskin an egg as the Chochma. Omar Lehem, then he said, okay, send in my oldest son, the Gamliel. Nichnas Gamliel Etzlo. And to him, he taught him over Sidrei Nesiyas. You see, in the context, the mashma'ut is that it's the question of the nimuzi, the way you have to act as a nasi. Omar lo b'ni, nehog nesiyotcha beramim. You have to treat yourself like a melech. Have only the greatest people with you, and it should be with a tremendous kayach of the Kovod HaTorah. And zrok mara b'talmidim. Get the talmidim to be scared of you, and they should never have any kind of doubts about what you're saying. What you're supposed to be, Zrok, Marab, Talmidim, and not treat the Talmidim with love and with respect? Eini, is that true? Doesn't it say that you're E Hashem Yechabed? It says in Tehillim. And Omar Mar, you know what David HaMelech was referring to? To the Madrega of Yehoshaphat Melech Yehuda. When Yehoshaphat would see a Talmud Chacham, he would jump out of his own kisei of Malchus. He would run to the Talmud Chacham and would hug him and would kiss him and would say to him, Rebbe, Rebbe, Mori, Mori. I mean, that's not Zrok Mora. And if that's the din of a Melech, so Alachas Kama Rekama Nasi was on lower Madrega of Kabbalah, then a Melech should be able to act the same way and to show his love for his Talmidim and not to be Zrok Be Mora, says the Gemara in Lokasha. Yehoshaphat would treat his Talmidim like that when he was alone. But when it was in a public place where he had to maintain the covet of the Malchus, he would blast them out and he would treat them with Mora to make sure that everyone would see the Madrega of Kovod HaTorah that is necessary. Tanya, Rebbe Mutal B'Tzipori U'Makom Muchan Lo B'Beit Sha'arim. So Rebbe was sick and dying in Tzipori, but a place for his kfura was already bought in Beit Sha'arim. But wait a minute, in another brisa it says that the meaning of tzedek, tzedek tirdov was go and run to Rebbe's bezdin in Beit Sha'arim, not in Tzipori. So apparently he lived in Beit Sha'arim. Why are you saying that he lived in Tzipori and was buried in Beit Sha'arim? Answers the Gemara, yes, Rebbe was initially, he actually lived in Beit Sha'arim. It's true. But when he became sick they moved him to Tzipori because Beit Sha'arim is very hot. It's in the valley. And obviously Tzipori is called Tzipori because it's medallic at Tzipor. It's very high, like a bird flies. So since it's medallia, Bosim Avira, the air in Tzipori is very fresh and very sweet. When someone gets sick, the Goyim go to Switzerland and the Bnei Yisrael go to Tzipori, which has so much nicer air than as Switzerland ever had. Okay. So I suppose we'll have to stop now because it's so late. And we'll have to make up the daf Bezrat Hashem during the course of the week. Meanwhile, I wish you all the Bosi Mavira of Eretz Yisrael, those of you who are not Zech to be here, Bekorev, and wishing you also what they love to wish at this time of the year. A Chorev Bori. Richie came in just in time to get that bracha. A Chorev Bori, a Gesunden Winter.